Welcome to Financial Perspectives, the podcast. Join the team at Foster Group and our expert guests as we explore a variety of subjects that could impact your financial life. We will cover timely economic and financial market news, a wide range of personal financial planning ideas, and investment topics. Ultimately, we want to encourage educated optimism and do our best to provide valuable insights to help you navigate your financial journey with confidence. Please stick around at the end for important disclosure information. More information about Foster Group can be found in our ADV brochure at fostergrp.com.
Well, it's September 3rd, and we are now just over 9 months into the second Trump administration. Over those 9 months, there's been a lot of announcements, pronouncements, explanations, and speculations about what is coming, so much so that I think even the most avid news consumers can wonder if they really have the latest information. From tax and tariff policy to foreign policy, the state of flux is undeniable. But one area that's gotten a lot of attention earlier in the year and that affects all Americans is tax policy and legislation that goes along with it. So at this point, the speculation, though, is mostly over, as the range of tax provisions discussed were finalized and included in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or OBBA, that was signed into law by President Trump on July 4th. So to help unpack some of the more relevant portions of this new tax law, I'm really happy to welcome back to Financial Perspectives, Marcus Iwig. Marcus is a senior lead advisor at Foster Group. He's a CPA, and while he no longer prepares tax returns for his day job, he does pay close attention to the tax law since it can have such an impact on individual financial plans. So, Marcus, thanks for joining us again. All right, let's jump right in here. You know, the OBBA was hotly debated in Congress and in the media, I think in part because so many different ideas are being thrown around in terms of rates and policies. Congressional leaders, the president, his advisors all had different ideas. So it's not hard to understand why people may be just a little unsure about what made it into that final bill, right? So let's unpack some of the items that will apply to most taxpayers. And the first one is, overall, I think there's been some confusion about rates, personal tax rates. It sounded, you know, some people said, hey, this is going to be a tax cut, or actually this is a tax increase. Where did things actually land?
Well, it's a good question. It's a frame of reference question, really, Kent. What actually happened was rates are going to stay where they've been for the last around 8 years. Back in 2017, with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the rates were reduced. And as a part of that, they were set to go back to where they were pre-2017. That was going to, we call that a sunset, that was going to happen at the end of 2025. And basically what the One Big Beautiful Bill did was say they're not going to go back, they're going to stay where they've been the last 8 years, and it's quote unquote permanent. So it really just depends on whether you think about it as the rates were going to be higher in 26 because they sunset, or whether they're going to stay the same as to whether you call it a tax cut or an extension of where we are.
Yeah, I think that really is a frame of reference question. I know both parties have to have a different view. Yeah. If you were expecting the sunset to happen, in other words, you're expecting those tax rates to rise, and you say, oh, this is now a tax cut because we're not letting them rise to where they were.
Correct.
But for most people, they're just going to be looking at the same rates.
Right.
Tax rate structure.
Yeah, which has been starting at 0, 10, 12, 22, 24, and then it caps out at 37% as the highest rate.
Okay. Any changes to capital gains rates?
They're going to stay where they've been as well. So 0% if you're under certain income thresholds, and then for most people, 15%. If your income gets rather high, they can go up to 20%. But that's where they've been for the last 7, 8 years, and they're going to stay there.
Okay, well, that's kind of nice. Well, yeah. You know, things we've gotten used to maybe are staying the same.
For sure.
At least for a while.
Yep.
At least for a while. We'll see. There was talk along the way about eliminating some kinds of taxes. One in particular, the president talked about eliminating the tax on Social Security income.
Yeah.
How did that come out?
Yeah, so that's been a confusing one. The rhetoric coming pre the bill passing, and even now you're starting to see some commercials that say, you know, Congress eliminated tax on Social Security or reduced it. That's actually not what happened. So what ended up getting negotiated was a senior deduction. So it has nothing to do whether you have taken Social Security or not. It has everything to do with your age. If you're 65 or older, you're going to get a $6,000 deduction off your income. And there's limits on that. We call that a phase out. So if your income goes above $150,000, it phases out. Once you're at $250,000 for married filing jointly, you won't get it. But that deduction is completely tied to your age, not Social Security. So $6,000 for an individual, $12,000 for a married couple.
And that's whether you're taking, so if someone's putting off taking Social Security till, you know, 70 or something right. like that, they would still be eligible for the deduction, even though they're not taking the Social Security income.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So it's truly detached from any
yes.
Social Security income status.
Yes.
Okay. That's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, another area that got a lot of attention is the SALT, the state and local tax
yeah.
deduction. I think the complaint was, you know, it originally had been lowered to $10,000 in the 2017 bill.
Right.
And that $10,000 seemed like not a lot if you're in a high property tax or high income tax state.
Yeah.
So the question was, well, should we let it rise? And by how much should we let it rise?
Yeah.
Up? What happened?
Yeah, that was one of the bigger hangups with getting the bill passed through Congress. A lot of negotiation on that. They did ultimately increase that cap from 10,000 to 40. That's what you're going to read about in certain publications. There's quite a few or a substantial caveat or two to that. The largest being that it's going to be phased out above a certain income limit. So
okay.
for a married couple, this is true for single people as well. It's the same number. If your income's above 500,000, it's going to be phased out by the time you're at 600,000. It's right back down to $10,000 deduction. So, and I think the other interesting part about that one is that, you know, the difference between a standard deduction and itemized deduction. The standard deduction number is still pretty high. In fact, it got bumped a little bit with this bill, not anything crazy, but for a married couple, you get a standard deduction of over $30,000. The SALT deduction is a part of a group of itemized deductions that collectively have to exceed that standard deduction. So it can just be kind of hard when you, no matter what, you get $30,000 standard deduction, they get a collection of itemized deductions above a little over $30,000. So there again, it's going to help some people, but I think for a lot of people, it's not going to change a whole lot from a tax perspective.
So. What you said at the beginning of your answer was there's a couple caveats with that.
Yeah.
So one of the things I take away from that, anytime a tax bill, people talk about, hey, let's simplify the tax code. Doesn't sound like we necessarily simplified things with this bill. You know, another area that kind of sounds like that to me was when I heard about the charitable deduction rules.
Yeah.
You know, how they interact with that standard deduction, and now there's, a threshold now for charitable deductions as well.
Right. Again, charitable deductions are a part of a group of itemized deductions. So again, they're one of those things that, you know, collected with the other itemized deductions has to exceed that 30-ish thousand number for married couples. And on top of that, now there's a half a percent floor. This is similar to your medical deduction, but the floor means that your charitable deductions have to exceed a half a percent of your gross income before you can deduct it. So if you have gross income of $100,000, your first $500 of charitable deduction is not deductible. So just to your point, another little area of complication, this bill yeah. did not do much in the way of simplifying tax law for
okay.
So
we just can't seem to get there. It's a good idea, but yeah. it never really happens.
For sure.
You know, because of that, one of the things, there's a few other things around that charitable deductibility and charitable planning. We're going to have another Financial Perspectives podcast about that specific topic coming up with advisor Caleb Brown. So look for that one in the future. We'll dive more into detail there. I think the last thing to touch on really and changes here specifically is maybe in the area of estate taxes. Again, I think people were wondering, hey, is this going to roll back with the sunset? Is it going to extend? What's going to happen? So what did happen when the dust settled?
Yeah, they ended up basically extending where we were in 2024, 2025, which is you know, now it's going to be $15 million estate tax exemption per person. That's just a little bit of a bump on where we were. We were $14 million and some change. If that hadn't been put in this bill, it was due to sunset to roughly half of that number, so $7-8 million. So that was implemented, and it is quote unquote permanent until somebody changes it, which just at least gives a little level of certainty in planning for that.
Yeah. So I like that word permanent. So as a former legislator, when we laugh about this, sometimes you go, gosh, it's permanent, meaning yes, there's not a sunset, it's not automatically going to change. But of course, another administration, another Congress, they can just come in and with the word notwithstanding, meaning notwithstanding whatever was in the tax code before, they can create new law that would actually change what's here. So for right now, we kind of know the rules of the road, but it doesn't mean that future administrations can't actually change the
Correct.
Rules. Well, any other changes that you think are worth highlighting that we should talk about today?
Well, I mean, you laugh because we talk about not eliminating complication. I mean, the bill was well over 800 pages long. We're covering the income tax piece. And there's some on the business side that we're not really talking about, some extension of Section 179 and depreciation rules that if you're a business owner, reach out to your CPA or advisor to get clarity on. Much of those were extensions of where they've been, generally benefiting business owners. So that's out there. There were some changes to 529 usage rules that were expanded. So for instance, you can now use those for some professional certifications like a CFP, like we are, is potentially one way to spend those dollars. But yeah, those things, if they're a part of your financial life, you know, definitely reach out to your advisor on those. And then some pretty, probably one of the more, you know, dramatic areas of changes around federal student loan, how those are going to work for people. Again, not part of today's conversation. Today's about income tax changes, but you know, if those are areas that are part of your financial life, certainly reach out to your advisor to get clarity on those.
Yeah. So that reaching out to your advisor is one of the things that we've talked about in preparing for this conversation was this idea of not letting the kind of the tax tail wag the dog of your financial plan,
right,
so to speak. And really what it sounds like for most people, the changes in these things where there are changes are fairly benign. They're not the kinds of things that would create a dramatic change to somebody's financial plan.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to say that earlier. I'm a tax nerd, if you will, and I'd love to pull apart, you know, taxes and help people save money. I also, you know, you can overdo that. You can let the tax tail wag the dog. And I think to your point, Kent, these changes, while they may help some people, they're pretty small. And I certainly wouldn't encourage clients to try and manage their income and the way they're spending their money, especially in retirement, to try and save just a little bit of tax. So it's great to get a $6,000 or $12,000 senior deduction. I probably wouldn't, you know, spend the second half of my year trying to manage my income to under $150,000 just to get that if you spend that kind of money. So, yeah. And there's things like in Iowa, for instance, on the salt cap, our state taxes are very low in general now, and for a lot of retirees, non-existent or close to it. So it's like that salt cap will matter for a group of people in Iowa, but there's a lot of retirees where that's just not going to change much because we don't have a lot of state income tax, especially for retirees.
Yeah, so that really is going to be a state-by-state impact. Those
for sure.
High property value, high property tax states, or high state income tax states, that is going to pinch some folks.
Yeah.
But yeah, for a lot of states, it's not going to be a big deal.
Yeah, and we're already seeing, I've already worked with a few clients who pay enough state tax to benefit from that. But, you know, when you pay a lot of state tax, you generally make a fair amount of money. So their income's over that phase out. So there again, we're seeing that window be relatively limited as far as, you know, significant impact. It will for some people, but there's a lot where these things just aren't going to move the dial.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Marcus. Super helpful conversation. Yeah, I hope it's been helpful for people listening just to kind of put your mind at ease, really, in terms of personal tax situations and what really changed and what didn't. You know, folks are going to differ on the impact of long-term picture economically and what this might mean for debt and deficits, for example. But that's always the case in any bill that comes out of Washington. We know that. As we mentioned, our October podcast will feature a conversation with Caleb Brown. In that episode, we'll take a closer look at charitable giving strategies for the year end 2025 and how this new bill might impact charitable giving plans going into 26 and beyond. So be on the lookout for that one. And Marcus and I actually are going to be having an extended version of this tax conversation, as well as talking about year-end tax planning in a webinar format on Wednesday, November 12th. We'll be taking questions from anyone registering, as well as those who are watching or listening. For now, thanks for joining us. Whether you're listening to our podcast or watching our video feed, it's always our hope to deliver helpful information in a way that avoids the sensationalism that sometimes accompanies today's media world. Sometimes. At Foster Group, we continue to believe that an educated optimism is warranted today, and that this mindset not only makes sense, but has the benefit of helping to avoid unwarranted and unproductive worry and anxiety, the kinds of things that can attach to an uncertainty about the future. If you have other topics that you'd like to see us address, please let us know at our website, www.fostergrp.com. And also, if you're enjoying our podcast, would you consider giving us a like on your podcast app and share with your friends? I mean, who doesn't need a little more educated optimism in their day? See you next time.
The previous presentation by Foster Group was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of, or as a substitute for, personalized investment advice from Foster Group or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy, or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content, will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Foster Group is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if Foster Group is engaged, or continues to be engaged, to provide investment advisory services. A copy of Foster Group's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.fostergrp.com/disclosures.